Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. Coming up, we'll tell you if Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers can kiss and make up.
And if LeBron James can coexist with his new coach.
It's time for some big stories. Let's start in Dallas, where the Cowboys got another big game out of Ezekiel Elliott in a win over the Lions yesterday. With Zeke rushing for more than 150 yards and adding four catches for 88 yards and a touchdown, but was also Dak Prescott's best game of the year, passing for two touchdowns and topping 250 yards for the first time since week 13 last year. Marcellus, was that win more about Dak or Zeke?
Oh, it was about Zeke, absolutely. What you learned is that the Cowboys' offensive meeting room went like this. You know what? There's only one way you're going to win. There's only one way we could put up points is to feed Zeke. And think about it. The games before what we saw yesterday, Zeke didn't get 20-plus carries. Yesterday, 25 carries. Zeke had the most scrimmage yards and the most touches he had this season. That was being force-fed. That wasn't by coincidence. So what it did was now allow Dak Prescott to go out there and have a great game. Remember last week when Zeke had 100-plus rushing yards and Dak still struggled. This time, they give you even more of Zeke, and finally, Dak has a good game. Some are saying great game. But that's by, like, 1992 measurements and standard. If Dak Prescott is going out there throwing two touchdowns and 250 yards, and we're like, oh, my God, amazing. That's Eric Kramer. That's some old way before the new rules and new changes has occurred. To me, it's still about Zeke. If Zeke goes off and has an amazing game,
disagree.
Dak can be okay.
Disagree.
Let me hear.
The Lions have the worst rush defense in football.
All right.
They had the second best passing defense in football. Did a nice job of slowing Tom Brady down. Zeke was Zeke. But Zeke was what we, again, Zeke was Zeke.
Okay.
Dak is the guy that actually elevated, made the game-winning throw, that long pass to Zeke. I'll give it to him. But that was a dime that won and decided the game. And so Dak is the guy that elevated and gave the rest of the team confidence. This game was far more about Dak Prescott, who just last week there were people like, hey, man, is Zeke jumping off the Dak bandwagon? Are there questions in that locker room and in that organization about is Dak really our long-term quarterback? And again, did he answer that question definitively?
No.
Yesterday? No.
Oh, thank you.
But did he give people confidence like, oh, okay. If we do the right thing.
Why you sound like Snoop? Oh, okay. What you mean? What confidence? What?
If we do the right thing.
What?
Dak Prescott is. I thought I watched this game start to finish. I thought Dak was near perfection.
He near played, perfection, 255 yards, 17 to 27. Will you stop? That was an all-time game by Ezekiel Elliott. That was the best game we've seen from any running back from scrimmage this year. It took all of that. Like, historic implications for Dak to go, meh, good, all right, great. Like, use Dak. Look at the total sample size, the 3 years, 2016 until now. Dak Prescott, this is crazy. This is alarming. In today's NFL, has only thrown for three games over 300 yards in 3 years. Patrick Mahomes already done that twice and is going to do it again probably tonight to make it three in four games. I'm not even going to go there. Dak has never thrown for four touchdowns or more in any game ever. And Mr. Trubisky and others, I'm just saying, like, when we give Dak the pass, it's not fair to Ezekiel or to this franchise. And I think the offense finally figured that out, and they fed Zeke.
Patrick Mahomes is a rare talent. Working with one of the great offensive coaches of all time.
Okay.
Working with Tyreek Hill, one of the fastest receivers. Travis Kelce, one of the best tight ends.
What about Mr. Trubisky? What about Ryan Fitzpatrick a couple times? Like, give me one of those games where I'm just like, yeah, new NFL standards. Not Eric Kramer. Like, give me something. He's giving you nothing that shows you.
You know Cole Beasley's his top receiver, right?
That's not right. That shouldn't happen.
That's his top receiver. That's not right. His third down possession guy. Let me get a first down.
Dez was there, though, a couple of those years. And Cole Beasley played better than Dez.
Dez Bryant, the ghost of Dez Bryant was there for a couple years.
True.
Early on that first year, Dez was there. And Dak hasn't had the pieces. I don't think he has the right head coach in terms of offensive guru. That performance yesterday provided hope and confidence in Dallas. That, to me, if I – look, Ezekiel Elliott, we know he's one of the best backs in the league.
Preach.
The headline in the story is like, Dak restores some confidence, gives us hope in Dallas. Mm. If he can continue to play like that. Look, they're not out of the division.
No, they're not.
Philadelphia's 2-2.
Yeah.
I mean, Dallas has hope. All right, to a big story out of Pittsburgh, where the Steelers continue to struggle this weekend, putting up just 14 points in a loss to the Ravens. Big Ben admitted after the game that he's got to be better, but the team also missed Le'Veon Bell, with James Conner putting up just 19 yards on 9 carries. Marcellus, what's the bigger concern for the Steelers? Big Ben's struggles or Le'Veon Bell's absence?
Oh, it's Le'Veon Bell's absence. Think about this. When you're playing against a dynamic team like this, we used to call them the tripods. So over the years, we've seen a few tripods. You saw it in Dallas Cowboys when they won 3 or 4 championships, and they had Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, and Emmitt Smith. So as a defender, as a D coordinator, you're sitting there like, yeah, you know what? We're going to stack the box and make sure Emmitt doesn't beat us. You just let Troy Aikman throw the ball to Michael Irvin all day. So then you say, okay, we got to play pass defense. This is going to let Emmitt Smith run the ball. So then we played the back-to-back champion Denver Broncos. Oh, we're talking about Rod Smith, John Elway, and Terrell Davis. Same formula. You got to stop one, and then you let the other one beat you. So now in Pittsburgh, what they don't have is Le'Veon Bell. So it's no more Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell. Without him there in his absence, all the focus is on Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown is struggling this year beyond the sideline tantrums. Do you know that Antonio Brown has not had a 100-yard receiving game this year? Just think about his level of frustration. And it's only coming from one place, the absence of one Le'Veon Bell.
I think there's a lot of merit to what you're saying. You've argued a hell of a case. I'm just going to go back to where the NFL is right now. It's a quarterback league.
Yes, true.
Everything starts and finishes with the quarterback. And the quarterback's not right here. Big Ben is not the same. He is not aging the way Drew Brees and Tom Brady have aged. Mm. He didn't take care of himself early in his career. He just started a workout regimen during the offseason. Hey, I'm in the best shape. It's too little, too late.
Yeah.
I am Big Ben's biggest fan. He is, again, he's my favorite player in the NFL. Wears number 7 like John Elway. Reminds me of John Elway. Mm-hmm. But he's just not aging well. He is the problem. He's the maturity problem. He's the on-field problem. He needed an advisor. Because, again, when he started that stuff, like, I'm thinking about retiring and blah, those little veiled threats. Because I was sitting here on the show when he said that, and I was like, man, he's BSing. Mm. He's thinking about retiring. He's just trying to make a threat to the Steelers, and they're not buying it. And now they go out and draft Mason Rudolph, and then he's got a problem with that or whatever. Ben's immature, hasn't handled his career as well as Drew Brees and Tom Brady and some of his contemporaries, and it's falling apart and blowing up on him.
Yeah, look, the story of Big Ben is not a PR dream. I mean, he's not giving you the proper framework and backdrop that supports how good he really is. He's actually better than his story. Even looking at this year and his struggles, you still look at the numbers and you're like, there are 3 games where you're 350 plus yards. Like, and then there's games where you have too many turnovers, and there's games where it's inopportune times. But there are 2 different conversations, because if I'm using the Dak Prescott scale of evaluation that you used last segment, then Big Ben is fine, very good. But
we're not using the Dak.
But we are not going to use that right against Big Ben. What Big Ben is realizing is what Antonio Brown has realized. Yo, we need Le'Veon, and we need him now, because that's why you saw the success in the dynasties of before. And they had something dynastic. Whether they won all the Super Bowls or not, they've been to 2. They won 1, 13 wins last year. Without Le'Veon Bell, they really took a lot away from this offense.
Le'Veon Bell's value is unquestioned,
okay,
and they should pay him, in my opinion.
Yes.
I think he's proven that. I don't think he fixes the Big Ben problem.
Really?
No, because, again, Big Ben's immaturity keeps showing up no matter who's in the backfield. This has been an ongoing thing for the last 2 or 3 years. People have just been making excuses. He has not handled things well, all the way down to, and look, I know that Todd Haley can be a bully and annoying and all that.
Yes.
But I think Todd Haley was the right offensive coordinator. If Ben were in a different mindset of accepting coaching, of bowing to coaching a little bit, and partnering up with an offensive coordinator rather than going to war with one all the time. At some point, you have to say to Big Ben, how come every offensive coordinator Tom Brady has had, they seem to have some kind of special bond and partnership and friendship? And it seems like every coordinator or somebody that works for Big Ben, they're constantly at war. That's on Big Ben. And then you go look over at Todd Haley. He just put 42 points up with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
I think he's a pretty good offensive coordinator. And again, I know he can be a bit of a jerk, but some as a, you know.
Unfair there, because that's result driven. Like when Tom Brady beasts with Bill O'Brien and curses him out and all that, we say, oh, but they win the Super Bowl, so that's just passion. But then when you're Big Ben and you lose, but even though you win 13 games, 12 as a starter, and then we see you yell at the same
time. He got Todd Haley fired.
Yeah,
basically.
He did. And he
just had his buddy promoted offensive coordinator, and they just scored 14 points on Baltimore.
Right, and if they would have won last year, won it all, then we sit there and say, you know what, Big Ben knows best. But it's still result-driven, but I get you. His story's not telling the full picture.
The Packers defense was the star yesterday, shutting out the Bills in a 22-0 win, but even that didn't do much to satisfy Aaron Rodgers, who went off after the game about the team's performance on the other side of the ball.
Well, we were terrible on offense. It was as bad as we played on offense with that many yards in a long time. I mean, we were championship defensive level and non-playoff team offensive level today. That was not great by any stretch of the imagination. We need to find ways to get our playmakers in position to get some more opportunities.
When you say you got to find ways to get those guys the ball, how is that done? How do you do that? Is that by play selection? Is that by reads? How does that happen?
It's by the plan. Find ways to get him in number one spots.
All right, Aaron Rodgers to me is taking a little shot at Mike McCarthy here. You know, I think some of it has to do with the running back position. They're playing running back by committee, and there's a young running back, I think Aaron Jones, that Aaron Rodgers would like to see on the field more and get more touches. I think he was suspended for the first two games, but then in the third and fourth games, he was used in a committee way that that Aaron Rodgers doesn't like. I'm going to somewhat defend Mike McCarthy, somewhat, and just say Green Bay has a personnel issue. Always has. They don't go out and surround Aaron Rodgers with the best players. And so the coach's hands are tied to some degree. However, having said that, the expiration date may have reached its point with between the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers marriage.
You know, not only do they have a personnel issue, they always have a personality issue too. Like, you think about it, let's keep this 100. From day one, it's always something, and there's always a problem in Green Bay since Aaron Rodgers been there. Let's be real. Like, pre-draft, he dropped in the draft. People are saying that was personality-based. Whatever it is, he dropped unnecessarily, but he did. He gets to Green Bay. First thing is, he can't get along with Brett Favre, whether that's him or that's Brett Favre. Somehow, some way, he didn't show deference or reverence, or Brett Favre didn't extend the hand down to the young and up and coming, but somehow, some way, that didn't go well. Then all of a sudden, you see him out there, and immediately we're like, whoa, he's the best. And then we're like, okay, we're going to just ride that. Oh, he got a Super Bowl, but he's the best. He deserves more. He should get more. And then that's when the pressure kicks in. And all of a sudden, all the fingers start pointing. Whether he's getting hurt or he's like, this is not the proper team. This is not the proper personnel. I don't like my running backs. I don't like my receiving core. Oh, you're not keeping the players I want. Oh, the defense is not good enough. Like, every single year, if you start to add up the headlines, there's always something there in Green Bay. And I just think it just circles around the fact that he's feeling that pressure of being the best but not getting the best results. So Mike McCarthy, once again, will be the scapegoat like everything else has been, but it's not on Mike McCarthy.
And that's kind of where I would love Aaron Rodgers to go. I mean, everything that he was saying, at least point it at yourself, at least a little bit. And be like, hey, well, I got to play better, too. I got to hit guys coming out of their break or whatever. He didn't throw a perfect game. I mean, and absolutely, he is taking a shot at Mike McCarthy.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Without a doubt there. Yeah. He is saying something is going on. But that is Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if you ever met him in person.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
He is an intense guy. I don't think he – whether it's because he's developed a chip on his shoulder, but he's not trying to impress you. He don't care. He's just like, hey, I'm here. And he knows how good he is. He knows he's the best quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. He feels like he's in a position he can say whatever he wants to say. Because That's tough to do. Like, I don't know, as the face of your franchise, to come out and say he knows what he's a smart, he's a Berkeley guy. He knows what's coming after this. I'm surprised that he would do something like that, but I think the window's closing in his career. He's got three, 4 more years, and he wants to win another Super Bowl, and he feels like he's not being surrounded and the right plays aren't getting called. But point the finger at yourself, too. Say we're in this together.
Y'all making some fascinating points, and having played for a long time in Kansas City, having played in Buffalo, when I hear you all talk, I'm starting to think big fish in little pond. Mm. He's playing in Green Bay. He's the only attraction in Green Bay. What a cheese is the other thing.
Cheese curds.
Cheese curds. And so he has so much leverage and power being that kind of superstar in Green Bay that maybe he never does have to question himself because he's the greatest thing in Green Bay, in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it sounds a little drunk on your own power. Let's just be real. I mean, I've played with guys who had the same level of power but didn't act like that, didn't say those type of things, and the storyline didn't continue every single year where it's the surrounding parts. Like you said, Tony, even in greatness, even in you playing as well as you have, Aaron Rodgers, it's not perfection. So I thought the great quarterbacks can overcome some of these ills and issues surrounding them. Tom Brady certainly does every single year, and maybe he's having that kind of mental tug of war with his greatness, and therefore I'm not the problem. I'm the best at it. It has to be something surrounding me.
Is there a different mentality than playing in Kansas City as opposed to a major city like Atlanta? Being a star in those cities?
Mentality as far as what, though?
I don't know if there's other superstars in Atlanta, other people on your level in Atlanta. When you were in Kansas City, you know, you and Derek Thomas, and that was pretty much it.
Well, you feel the pressure to perform more in Kansas, the smaller town, because that's all they had. We were the only thing in town. The Royals weren't good back then. Where in Atlanta, you got everything going on. You see famous people out having lunch all the time. It's a big music. So you just, like you said, big fish in a little pond. You're a big fish in a big pond. There's other big fish out there. So you felt the pressure of carrying the city and the hopes and dreams of the city. Because when we did well, they did. You know, everybody was happy.
UFC bantamweight champion TJ Dillashaw loves the fight, loves the strategy. You know what else he loves? Toyo tires. Because like Dillashaw, Toyo tires are tough as they come, and they are the official tire of the UFC. There's a lot to love about Toyo tires. Aggressive design, proven on and off the road capabilities, tires for any weather, and the toughness to back it all up. There's a confidence that comes with tough tires. So no matter what you're driving, no matter where you're driving, you can count on Toyo tires. Tough people love tough tires. If you're tough, these are the tires for you. Toyo tires. The next time you need tires, ask for Toyo, the official tire of the UFC. Learn more at toyotires.com/UFC. All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
It's time for some big stories. Let's start in Pittsburgh, where the Le'Veon Bell saga may finally be coming to a close. Reportedly, Bell is planning to rejoin the Steelers during their bye in week 7. And the running back now says he doesn't expect to be traded. In fact, Bell says that despite everything that's happened, he hopes the Steelers will still give him a long-term deal, explaining, quote, "I could be naive or hopeful, but at the end of the day, I feel like that's what's going to happen. I don't think they really want me gone. That could be me being prideful, but I'm still holding out hope." Marcellus, does Le'Veon Bell look desperate here?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't look desperate at all. This is actually a parallel following the beats of Odell Beckham and the conversation he must have had with the brass with the New York Giants to the tune of, "Odell, relax. We know what you want, and we know what we want to give you. We respect your value, but this is not the way to get it. So what we need for you to do is to eat some of this, and then we'll feed you. But first, let's see you get in line with us and our organization and our values." I think right now, because all the reports were, he'll come back week 10 because that's the deadline. Now he's coming in a little earlier. Sounds like to me someone reached out from upstairs and said, "Hey, if you fall in line, we'll fall in line and respect you." And those are the beats.
To me, I don't think he looks desperate at all. To me, it sounds like someone watched the game tape of Big Ben and the Steelers without him and looked at James Conner with 19 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And the Steelers have come to their senses. And Le'Veon Bell being a smart player, You ever texted, and now you're married, but you ever text somebody late at night and you up? What you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
And you see them three little dots and they respond.
Oh, you right. You like,
like, that's what Le'Veon Bell is like. He watched that game and sent him a text like, what you doing? And then three dots is coming back and he's like, oh, I got him now.
I got him.
So I think the Steelers are the ones who look desperate here. They can't get it done without Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell knows it. And I think this is a match made in heaven. They need him. He needs the money.
Great. He became the special sauce. They realized Antonio Brown, no 100-yard receiving games. And like you said, 28th in rushing right now, not going
to
cut it.
All right, to a big story from Denver, where not everyone was so impressed with Patrick Mahomes' epic comeback last night. After the game, several Broncos sounded off about what appeared to be a missed delay of game penalty during the Mahomes game-winning touchdown drive.
My opinion, I mean, the clock was on zero, but that's not my job. He said, he looked up, it was zero, and the ball was gone. I disagree.
The ref came into the huddle and said that, you know, the ref, that's his one job, and he just missed it. And then so one of our players was like, well, if that's his one job, how did he miss it? Then he tried to say, oh, he was also looking at the quarterback. I don't know, man, how you missed that? That's crazy.
Oh, that was crazy, man. That's 2 weeks in a row, man. It's delay, it's zero on, 0 seconds on the clock. I mean, forever. If a ref mess up on a call, I mean, yeah, you should be able to fix it. Go back and fix it. Like, dude, look how long it was. The clock was on zero. I mean, come on, man. I mean, that's not why we lost the game. We still had plenty of chances, but that was a huge, huge no call.
Marcellus, you got a problem with all this whining from Denver?
Wow, I got a problem with you saying that's whining. I mean, that's not whining. Sports fans, Jason Whitlock, everybody who's on the wrong side of the fence with this, realize that if I point out your bad, your mistake, don't try to flip it on me like I'm the problem, like I'm the one that's complaining when you're not doing your job. I've been here before, and I've been there in bigger stakes than that. Playoff game against Tennessee Titans, Buffalo Bills, Music City Miracle, and they messed that call up. And yeah, post game, I look worse than them, crying, whining, according to you, because I'm like, y'all messed up. And it's crazy about our culture, especially sports fans, where we look at something that we know we messed up, but if your reaction is not in accord to what we want to see, we start blaming them. The players are sitting there saying, there's a big donut in a zero. Can you please just throw the flag so that play doesn't count? That's not whining.
Well, so you watched the game, right?
I did watch the game.
And so you saw earlier in that drive, it was 2nd and 30.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broncos couldn't get off the field.
Right.
And so the Broncos, to me, why they need to shut up here is 5 yards is going to save them. You think backing Patrick Mahomes up 5 yards was going to save them? The guy threw like a 30-some-odd-yard pass on that delay again. 5 yards was not going to save the Broncos.
But it wouldn't
have
counted.
They had 2nd and 30, and they couldn't stop him then. They had him wrapped around his legs, and he threw the ball left-handed for a first down. 5 yards.
But, okay, so let's keep listing. You're pointing out all the indiscretions against Denver. Add to that list, one of those plays shouldn't even count it, and you never know what that does in terms of momentum.
You know how many penalties the guy overcame? That's Pat Mahomes' magic. They need to shut their mouth and say, what? Pat Mahomes just stuck it to us. Them 5 yards wasn't going to save us.
But you got to understand, in the flow of a game, that matters. When you're stopping someone's momentum, when you're saying, hey, that play right there that looks successful and all that energy you got from it, we got to take that back.
Let me give you an analogy. If I came in here tomorrow, I lost five pounds. That's what you would do. You would sit there like, 5 pounds.
Wait, because you got a lot of field to go, man. A lot of first downs. The end zone far.
Laughing just like you just said. Like, that's good, dog. Yeah. You want a cookie? What?
Yeah, right. You are crazy, right, man.
To a big story from Kanye West, who continues to come up with novel ways to get our attention, telling TMZ yesterday that he's actually trying to engineer a meeting between President Trump and Colin Kaepernick.
I've been calling Colin this morning, reaching him so I can bring Colin to the White House and we can remove that sons of statement and we can be on the same page.
All right, Marcellus, would a Kaepernick-Trump meeting bring world peace to all of America.
Let's just start here. Yeah, world peace. Look, the core of this, I agree with. The core of this is something that is positive, which is let's get in a room with people you don't agree with. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. I agree with that stance. However, there are two issues with it. One, I don't know if Kanye West is the proper bridge to bring these two islands together. And two,
why not? All three are celebrities. No, that's all they are.
Yeah, but see, the tone has to be set by the one who's going to be the conduit. Like, the tone has to be set so that both sides know that this is a serious situation. Let's talk about the core constituents. Let's talk about the fan bases of both sides. I could see the pull from Kanye's, the pull that's going to come, not from Donald Trump, but more so if you're Colin Kaepernick's side, LeBron James, Steph Curry, many others who said, I don't even want to be around the president. I don't want to go to the White House. I don't want to shake his hand. I have nothing to say to him. I think that's going to be a pull for Colin to say, maybe not. And then you start to look at the wobbly bridge of Kanye West being the introduction to this situation. I think it's too much.
I think it's off-brand for Colin Kaepernick. He is part of the resistance, and he's just a brand. He has no interest. It's not allowed as a part of the resistance to meet with the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it'll accomplish anything, because even if he did go there, I don't think he'd go there with a genuine, authentic purpose in mind other than furthering his brand. And I'm just not, all these little celebrity meetings and gatherings and symbolics of, you know, President Obama had a beer summit or with, you know, some guys or whatever. I don't think it accomplishes much. I do agree with you, though. If somehow there was some symbolism in people that disagree getting together and quit treating each other like they're evil human beings that need to be eliminated from the planet, there would be some, you know, progress there. But I just don't see it happening. I think it's off-brand for Colin Kaepernick, and it's actually kind of on-brand for Trump. He loves meeting with celebrities and athletes and things like that, but I just don't see it happening.
I think it's trolling. Kanye last time, Slavery Was a Choice, album drop. Now he got another album coming out, all of a sudden he wants to do this.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and D'Angelo Hall. Let's return to the NFL, where the trend toward high-flying offenses is reaching new heights this season, with four quarterbacks already on pace to break Peyton Manning's all-time single-season passing record. So far, Big Ben, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, and Derek Carr are all outpacing Peyton's blistering 2013 season. But aside from Goff, those guys are all on losing teams and aren't even playing that particularly well. I think this is a bad thing. I don't like this. They're devaluing the quarterback position by making the pocket too safe. Anybody can do this. Hell, you might throw for a few hundred. Yeah,
they call me Baby Elway for a reason. I can throw. I love it because I love the results. Watching that Rams-Vikings game last week, that might have been the best football game I've seen in many of years. It felt
last
that way.
Till last night. Go ahead.
Another game where it's high scoring. That's my point. I don't like defensive struggles. I play defense. I don't want to watch Titans-Jags 9-6. I want to see arena ball. I want to see the Super Bowl 41-33. I'm all in for it because I love the results.
Here's what they've done. They've created rules that essentially protect. I mean, if you eat onions pregame and you breathe on a quarterback, you're going to get fined. That's the way it goes, and you just have to put it in context. If you're a guy that's going to spit stats in my eyes, there's two things that I realize. Either, one, you didn't watch the game and you're just spitting stats, or two, you watch the game but you have no idea what you're looking at. So when you start comparing these numbers to Peyton Manning, when you start comparing these numbers to other quarterbacks who have played before, just understand context. Understand that the league has changed, and you've got the protection of the pocket. You're not, as a DB, you're not allowed to touch a receiver anymore. You're not allowed to jam guy. Right. I mean, it's completely created. The rules have completely created this kind of production. And I'm with you. It is what it is. I don't like it. I don't like that part of it, but that's the way the game is now.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am on it. I don't necessarily like it, but it is what it is. Just because Peyton's records may fall doesn't mean he's not still one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Right.
You know, no disrespect to Emmitt Smith, love him to death, but I don't, just because he has the rushing total, I don't think he's the best running back to ever have played the game. There's a couple guys I would throw out there throw up there even higher than him. Let's say Barry Sanders, for instance.
Yeah, exactly.
If you put him on Emmitt's team, that's always been a debate growing up. If you put a guy on that team, what happens? And so numbers are numbers. And, yes, the way today is, they don't even play the game 15 years ago since I came in the league and now that I'm out. It's totally different.
It is.
Teams on defense and offense, they stay in that nickel sub personnel where they're constantly throwing the ball. Back in the day, it was smash mouth, hit you, let's go. And that's 15 years from my rookie year. And so and Peyton played in a little bit of both of those eras. We were talking a little bit off camera about being able, somebody's game being able to transition from the era they played in to another era. Mm-hmm. Peyton's one of those guys who played in both those eras. Tom Brady the same way. He's still up there as far as greatness, but he won't be up here as far as numbers because he didn't sling it all over the yard.
I just feel like, though, quarterback is the premier position in sports, in all the sports. It used to be shortstop in baseball, used to be the heavyweight champ in boxing. Now it's the quarterback. And we keep making the job easier. And that's what kind of drives me crazy. I agree with you, Marcellus, that this weekend's games were off the chain.
Yes.
And awesome.
Yeah.
Last night's game was awesome. The ratings are up. So maybe I'm the old dude, you know, shouting into the wind or whatever, because everybody else is enjoying this and quarterbacks are healthier and maybe giving them more protection in the quarterback has made football more entertaining. And so if it's safer for quarterbacks, maybe it's more entertaining. But I just feel like football to me has always been a game of intimidation and trying to impose your will on the other guy. And it's harder to do that to the quarterback.
Here's the thing I don't like about it. There is a toughness quotient that you had to have to play in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason that not everybody plays. One, most guys haven't been touched by the hand of God with the ability to play. The other thing is most guys, even though they talk about how good they were in high school, aren't tough enough to play this game
exactly.
At this level. And you're taking out that quotient. There's something special about a quarterback who'll stand down the gum barrel and take one in the lips for his team and get back up and keep playing. And
but
you're eliminating.
But
no,
I know,
no, we're not.
But you're starting to eliminate.
C.J. Beathard. C.J. Beathard would disagree with y'all right now.
Yeah, he's still
okay, and we,
Patrick, he doesn't have a choice, though. C.J. Beathard don't have a choice.
Look, you watched the end of that Rams-Vikings game, which is arena football. But still, you saw that game end by defensive stance. Two sacks, and Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, slamming quarterbacks to the ground. Like, you still have to be tough. Like, they're making it safer, but they're not necessarily making it easier. Let's not conflate the two because, these numbers by all the quarterbacks are going to inflate because the game has changed. We have made the situation where we want to see inflated stats. I give you that. But you still got to sit there in that pocket and take some L's, and a lot of quarterbacks still get hit. Ask Aaron Rodgers. What happened to him?
I mean, they get hit, but to Mark's point, it's not the same. Me knowing – all right, if I get hit, it's gonna be 15 yards or da-da-da-da, or that guy's gonna get in trouble. He's gonna get penalized versus me getting hit feeling like, oh man, he just gonna keep hitting.
So you want Joe Thigpen.
You gotta have
football,
a mental.
Huh? If it don't go out like Joe Thigpen,
you have to have a toughness.
You know what
the same thing I said yesterday.
Same thing with the quarterbacks. You touch a quarterback. Come on. Is Baker Mayfield out of the hospital when he got that and he got a 15-yard penalty on that one? I mean, give me a break. Same thing with receivers. I mean, you hit a receiver over the middle, and the first thing they do, they're not hurt. They lay on the ground, and then they go, oh, where's my flag? You're like, that drives me crazy.
There was a skill to playing quarterback in terms of you would get hit, and you'd be dazed and confused for the next play or two. And there's less of those plays now, Marcellus. There are some.
So you want more of them?
Less of them. Well, that was part of a quarterback that could play a little bit dazed and confused. And still, that's why I love Phil Sims, man.
Tough
Phil
for
Sims would stand in
that
pocket and take
dudes.
A hit and could still call the next play and get through the next two or three plays.
Oh, look at him. He had to go uphill both ways, huh? Good for you. Like, it's called evolution, man. The game is evolving. Grow up. Nobody wants to die on the field anymore. Y'all stop.
All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Over there is Dante Jones. All right, let's move to LeBron James, who will make his Staples Center debut with the Lakers tonight against the Nuggets after the team's preseason opener Sunday. Coach Luke Walton said it was, quote, awesome to be coaching LeBron James.
Awesome.
But James's history as a coach killer is well known, and I'm not convinced he and Walton will be able to coexist. before I hear from you, Marcellus, I'm going to ask Dante.
Thank you.
You know, Dante, he's a homer for LeBron James, and he loves LeBron. I love LeBron,
I'm all about good people, man. You know, his record speaks for itself, man. Like,
The record of coaches, the record number of coaches he'll play for.
Coaching turnover is tough in the sport, period. But when you have him, you're held to high expectations. You're held to win. And a man that's won 50-plus games in the past 10 straight seasons and, been in 8 straight finals, you're held to a level of excellence. And it's no disrespect to the coaches, but you just have to find the right mix. I think Luke and him will work well together because Luke is a great guy. And he's seen that Golden State organization and that culture where they make things work in a different manner. I think he'll be able to bring some things and teach LeBron how to move off the ball. But what Luke has, and I think Luke will use, is a guy who's going to set the tone for the culture and for the locker room of those young guys. And they have a lot of young talent, as I was talking to you guys about before. But you have to mold those guys. I think they're a veteran away from being able to help Luke and LeBron at the end of their bench to be able to help them permeate throughout the lineups and the overall guys, just be able to teach them how to be champions, teach them how to be professionals. Because on NFL rosters like NBA rosters, if you don't have the right guys on the back end of the roster, they won't develop the necessary habits to be in a championship mentality.
Yeah, those enforcers.
I got a great analogy before, but I want you to go first, Marcel. You got any thoughts on this before?
Wow. I'm going to give you a great analogy. Way to set the table for the great analogy.
I got a great analogy.
Okay, let's do it.
Talk to me.
I know this is going to work. One, anyone who knows Luke Walton, as you do, he has something about him where he can endear a Kobe Bryant, where a lot of people couldn't find a way into Kobe Bryant and have that great relationship. He did. His cachet in the NBA is greater than even his playing career, and that comes from having a personality that's likable, that gets it. This is a dude that gets along with all types. I'm talking about all complexions.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Like Luke cool with the brothers too. And it's crazy. He's a young former player who just gets it. So I see LeBron, and stop using Coach Killer, because look at these names and look at the guys that he had to act. And he had a video film instructor, and he was like, man, who's this dude? Eric Spoelstra. Pat Riley, come on down here. And Pat was like, nah, man, I'm telling you, the guy has the goods. So he's not a coach killer. Matter of fact, he's made coaches' careers.
Let me I'm going to try to put a positive spin on this because coach killer is a strong word.
Thank you.
And I think some people take it the wrong way.
Right.
I'm going to use my mother as an analogy. My mother is the GOAT when it comes to being a mother. She is the GOAT. She's the greatest of all time. And she knows it. And so she's the smartest mother of all time. And so that means she's run a lot of households, and she ran her own. When she comes to my house, I run a completely different game plan than what she did. Mm-hmm. But because she's the GOAT, she still wants to run my house. And I have to raise my hand and object and say, this is my house. Mm. We run it my way. I pay the bills now, Mama. Mm. I don't care about how great you were in the past and all that. Now I'm daddy. And so it's my house, and we run things my way. I know you're the GOAT.
Yeah.
And so that's LeBron. LeBron is the GOAT. He's smart, and maybe he's even smarter than the head coach. He hasn't developed the discipline to, okay, this is Luke's house, or this is Ty Lue's house. I'm going to let them. He can't let go. He's like my mother to this day. She, trust me.
Finish the story, though.
What?
Daddy, what?
But a part of your growth as a son and as sons, period, we have to take the knowledge that your mother's giving you rather than just jump and say, Ma, this is my house. You have to listen to what she's saying and try and grab something from it. Mm. But what he does not get enough credit for is that as he grows older, he takes knowledge in and he's just not, this is how I do it. He learns, he listens. There's going to be some pushback, but the greatest teams that are out there are the teams that are ran by the players. The coach does not have to do everything. The coach is responsible for leading, for motivating, but they can't be in control of the whole locker room. They could never have control over the whole locker room. You have to have the guys in the locker room to set the tone for the team and how they're going to play, how they're going to behave on and off the court. I think he's great because he knows how to behave on and off the court. He knows how to teach these guys about social media and how to use it for his advantage and how to focus and tune these things out when it becomes playoff time. You have the greatest example you could have in modern basketball right now in your locker room, and they need to work together to be able to create the culture necessary to bring the Lakers back.
And just ask Eric Spoelstra, he will run over you on his way to the sideline when he's frustrated.
He's not 6'9 like Luke.
It's time for That Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Oh, man, I got to show love to the big uglies. Just not just us up here, but the guys in the trenches who don't get enough love. So let's start off with the big uglies. And number three, that dude's dude, is the Jets D-tackle Leonard Williams, who's going to go with the three-pronged approach. Look at him. You see him loop around, get to the quarterback sack on there. Also had four tackles in the game. But let's see how he got there. First thing he's going to do is identify, I want to go inside, but look at that brick wall. I'm getting double teamed. So instead of going through the double team, he's smart. He's going to look at guard A.J. Cann and now hit him with the old college move. And since he's lunging, A.J., you know you can't be in that position. That's the shrimp position. Every D-line coach loves to see offensive linemen in that position because he's lunging. Now you got to get over. And how do you clear? That is with the right arm, the clear technique. A lot of times you see that arm out there, it's for a reason, to get past the offensive lineman, making sure he can't recover. Leonard Williams, you're our number three, that too.
Pretty good.
Let's go to number two. It's going to get better, big dog. Let's go with the sophomore D lineman, Quiddy Pay. Here, Quiddy, Quiddy. Look at here, Quiddy, Quiddy, Quiddy. Michigan beat
Quiddy Pay or Quiddy Pay?
Oh, Whoop-a-tie, Super-tay. Quiddy Pay of Michigan. First, he has his eyes locked on Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson. He sees him right there, but, oh, there are three guys in front of me. How can I get to him? Got these hungry eyes right now. So it's time to go to the lanes. Time to do a little bowling. Watch this action that happens here. He ain't quitty, quitty, quitty. Everybody goes because when you're out of position,
wow,
everybody fell. And now he's like, let me be gentle. I know the new rules. I'm going to lay him softly on this bed so I don't get the flag. And, oh, quitty, 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 lays him down. Number two.
Those Northwestern linemen look Rudy Poop.
Poop, poop, poop. And now for our number one, that dude of the week. Andrew Whitworth.
Finally.
Whitworth is greater than Whitlock. We all know that, but let's show you how. Look at him coming out there on the second level. Not one, but two guys down. And he hasn't allowed a sack all season. So this is the first thing that happens. You see him coming around the corner. Look at his tail for the tape. When you see these two dudes lock eyes, I know you're a Ram and I know you're a Viking, but uh-oh, trouble's ahead. 6'7", 330 versus 5'10", 192. Guess what that sounds like?
Mayweather versus Tyson.
And here we go. Boom, boom. What you got to say about this? Come on now. Yes, you did. You lost the tail of the tape. You lost that play and laughter in the meeting room. And Andrew Whitworth, or our dad dude of the week.
Finally an offensive lineman with the greatest play of the week and the greatest play of the season.
Had to hook you up, big dog. Had to hook you up.
Appreciate it. All right, Marcellus, that was awesome. Let's move to some big stories. Starting in New York, where the Giants are off to a terrible start, and so is the $90 million man, Odell Beckham Jr. Mm. A lot was made of Odell's off-field transformation this summer, but now Newsday says it might be hurting the team on the field and that the Giants should let Odell go back to his old crazy ways. Marcellus, is Odell why the Giants are struggling?
I won't go as far as saying he's the reason, but certainly the emotional, mental makeup of a player needs to be respected, no matter how crazy it is. Because we're talking about football. A great game of skill, a greater game of will. You need to let a player go to that third rail. As you always say, we're touched. So you got to let me go to that place, coach. I answer this question in story. I was in San Diego my first year. Mike Riley was our coach. And Mike Riley witnessed me break my foot when I first got to San Diego, before the season even started. I'm the highest paid player in franchise history. And all of a sudden, I'm not even going to play a game. And then I had surgery, came back 2 weeks later. Did not practice one time that year. And Mike Riley saw me play well, make the Pro Bowl, all pro. And in the offseason, you know what he came to me and said? He said, Marcellus, amazing year. I don't know how you pulled it off with one leg. A great year. But let's talk about your leadership. Let's talk about how other players are looking at you and looking up to you. We want you to tone it down. We want you to calm it down. Now, remember, I'm the DJ. I'm pregame music, postgame music. They play my song during the games. I'm not practicing. I'm boisterous. I'm enjoying putting my foot in an ice bucket while my teammates are out of breath, and I'm laughing at it, but I always showed up. Why I give you that story is because they calmed my emotional makeup down. Coincidentally, my production started to decline as well. Be careful what you do to Odell between the ears.
That's a hell of a story, and you put me, because I have a whole different take in terms of, I don't think Odell needs to be immature to have success. I think they need a better quarterback, period.
True.
And so they can sit here and talk about Odell needs to be crazy. Like, no, he needs a quarterback who throws the ball accurately on time to Odell Beckham Jr. But you just moved me a bit in terms of that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And because trust me, I remember that year you had, and I remember going to San Diego and like, man, they let this dude kind of wild out. They play his music and he's out here dancing, doing all.
Yeah.
And toning that down took a little of the edge away. That's a fascinating story. And maybe, so I'm going to give it a kernel of truth to what Newsday is saying about Odell, but mostly I just think they need a young quarterback to get him the ball.
Good point.
All right, to a big story out of New England, where Gisele Bündchen appears to have changed her tune about husband Tom Brady's decision to keep playing football. Last year, Gisele made no secret of her desire for Brady to retire sooner rather than later. But yesterday on Good Morning America, she had a very different message.
Tom has talked about his retirement. He kind of said, I'll play five more years, mm-hmm. and you've had said some other things. But in the book, you kind of said, what will be.
Yeah, just, because, you know,
he's happy.
Yes, because when you love someone, you want them to be happy. Yeah. I never seen someone love something as much as he loves football. And it makes me happy if I said anything in the past, is because you have a concern. You know, no one is going to hurt someone I love. You know, mm-hmm. you just feel very protective of them. So obviously, if someone hurts my children, my husband, anyone I love, I get like a lioness.
Marcellus, I thought Gisele would force Brady to retire before he wanted to, but after listening to that, it sounds like Tom may get to play as long as he wants to. What's your take?
Yeah, I think that her initial concerns were genuine, and I think that now she's like, hey, I put my hands up. I'm allowing you to do what you love to do. And she's respecting not only his passion, but the calendar of life. You talk about a professional athlete, and we have a finite shelf life. I don't give a damn how good you are. It's coming to an end, right? And I think she finally respected that, hey, he can only do this one time in his life, and then it's over. There's no coming back to this. So let him go out there and do what he loves best. So that sounds like the evolution of a relationship where, hey, I like the opera, and you don't like the opera, but we like the opera. So it's, you know, now they're in accord and thinking the same way.
Listen, I was someone that thought, look, she's got just as much money as him, half the money, if not more.
More.
And she's got all the Gisele. And so I thought that gave her the power in this relationship. And my contention, you know, when Colin and I were doing the show, was like, Gisele's going to win here. But I got to go a different direction here and say that, and look, and this will be a controversial statement. People get upset when I say this, but this is very inspiring to me. This okay. is like when I hear people say, make America great again, this is what I think about. Tom Brady taking back control of his household.
Oh, what?
Because a lot, listen, Marcel, what I say to a lot what? Of guys, what? A lot of guys run around the house and some guys run their house. Oh. And it looks to me like Tom's running his house again. So when I hear, this is like a return, you know.
A return of what? What are you going to say?
To the happy place where a man can be a man and, you know, kind of, you know, I kind of like this and respect this. And maybe that's why Tom was wearing the hat all this time.
I am not talking to you about gender roles and power relationship. Look, first of all, if you really want to put the symbols of who's the man in that relationship, Gisele got more money than him.
I know.
More recognizable. She running this thing. So she's the man if you want to go with those traditional terms, but let's get off of that. Let's talk about why she did cave.
Yeah.
Because quarterbacks have a charmed life. You play ball, who wears the red jersey in practice? The quarterback. Who should play forever ball till they fall? Kickers, punters, quarterbacks. Nobody's touching you except eight times on a Sunday. Stop. And only two of those hits hurt. So I think that finally he broke it down and said, baby, I could ride this till the wheels fall off. Now,
it's very inspirational.
Yeah.
It's very inspirational. To see Tom Brady, again, she's got more money than him. She looks better than him. She's more famous than him.
Yeah.
But Tom is still, you know.
So you over here championing for Stedman over Oprah?
What?
No.
Stedman's a Ball State grad, so yeah.
No, Stedman.
But look, if I was dating Oprah now, I would do what I was told.
Exactly.
I would do what I was told.
Yeah, I hear
same,
that.
Tamron, if you're watching Tamron Hall, same goes for you. I'd do what I was told.
That's your word.
But to see Tom Brady, you know, back on top, it's a beautiful thing. All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. Next to me to the right is Marcellus Wiley, or your left. Joining us now are Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and D'Angelo Hall. Let's move to Dez Bryant, who is still no closer to having a new job than when he was first cut by the Cowboys back in March. Dez has spent a lot of his unemployed time sounding off on social media, and now after a question on Twitter about where he might sign, Dez responded that he'd rather, quote, be with the Cowboys than a new team. And as crazy as it sounds, I think that's a good move for the Cowboys. I think Dez Bryant's been humbled. I think that there's no risk to bringing him in. If he doesn't work out, you just let him go again. I think it's a no-lose situation for the Cowboys. I'd pick up Dez Bryant for cheap and cut him if he didn't work out.
I think it would be a bad situation. Humility is not even a part of the equation. It's a bad marriage. It's a bad second marriage if you're Dez Bryant. He doesn't have Tony Romo anymore, who was a franchise quarterback, a risk taker, outside the pockets, off-script playmaker. Now he has a conservative, safe, third-year player who's still trying to play for his money and averaging 215 yards per game and safe throws and needs the running game to be beyond explosive for him to show elite numbers in production. So I think that Dez Bryant would come back, and he wasn't separating before. Whether he could do that now or not, he's not getting the 50-50 balls. Romo would throw a 50-50 ball. If you didn't catch it, I could deal with the results, the consequences. Dak Prescott's not in that mental space right now. I think it would be a bad marriage.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think they have enough receivers that can't beat one-on-one coverage right now. Can he play offensive line? I mean, if he come back and do that, I mean, isn't that what we're looking at? I mean, I look at this team, the way this team was constructed years ago, you had one of the best left tackles in football in Smith. He had a great offensive line. Now Smith has chronic back issues. You got a rookie playing left guard. Your center is gone. Your all-pro center and Travis Frederick is sick. Your right guard, who is the highest paid guy in football, hurt his knee in camp and is not 100% healthy. And Collins, your right tackle, is really better suited to play guard. Mm-hmm. So that's how they built this football team, to dominate a line of scrimmage, to run the football, to give your receivers opportunities to be one-on-one off the play action and affecting the underneath coverage, because you have to respect it. And they don't have that anymore. So I don't know how Dez Bryant's going to fix that. I just don't think he will.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with it too. Would it be nice? Yeah, it would be nice, but I don't see how it helps them win football games. And the ultimate thing that they did when they got rid of Dez was because it was the distraction in the locker room. It was having a young guy in Dak Prescott that you're trying to say, hey, this is your team. You know, no more Jason Witten. Sean Lee's on the way out of there. You get Dez Bryant out of there now, too. And now you can say, hey, young guys, it's on you guys. And so I just don't know. It's kind of that same dynamic you saw in Carolina when they kind of rushed Steve Smith out of there a little bit too soon to let Cam know, hey, this is your team. I just don't know if the progression of Dak Prescott with Dez Bryant in his ear would be a positive thing. Same. But if they brought him back, does this mean, hey, maybe Dak's not the guy? Maybe he's not who we thought he was going to be. And it's okay if we have a guy like Dez in that locker room. So there's a lot of different components to this that I just don't see how it would work out. But it'll be interesting if he goes back.
My thing with the Cowboys and Jerry Jones is, like, they're always in win-now mode. And y'all are talking about developing young receivers, developing Dak. Jerry Jones, to me, is about, I want to win this year. And if Dez Bryant in any way gives them a chance to be 2% better wide receiver, 3% better wide receiver, and because it's an easy out, I just don't see what the harm is. Their recent, and again, I get your point, Mark, it's like it's just another receiver that can't separate. I think if Dez Bryant were in the right mindset, like previous, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, in the right mindset, willing to take a reduced contract and humble himself and not be a distraction, there's upside to Dez Bryant.
Man, stop. They went to a concert, a Beyonce concert together, and he ain't get a deal. If you listen to Beyonce with your owner and you can't get a deal after that, you know what? It ain't happening, man. They already laid out the red carpet in terms of their relationship. We have mended that. And nothing came from that. So this is a situation where you're overthinking it. Like, it's a great story. D'Angelo nailed it. Great story. Not going to do much in terms of the X's and O's. Don't overthink this.
They've been in a win-now mode, like you said, since Jimmy Johnson was coaching there. And how much winning now have they done since that point?
I was going to say that. That's always the goal, but it never seems to materialize. And if Jerry Jones actually looked at this roster, this roster isn't set to
right. The O-line's not there. The defense is coming, but not there yet to play to that standard. All you got is Zeke that you really can bank on right now, and then you got some pass rushers like DeMarcus Lawrence, et cetera, but that's not enough. Not in today's game. Not with today's ammunition that's coming from the quarterback.
Yeah, when the Rams putting who they got out there.
Man.
Dallas don't have a chance.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes.
Yes, sir. Love it.
Let's move to Kevin Durant.
Do it, boy.
Who's entering the final year of his contract with the Warriors and is already facing questions about his impending free agency. But Durant isn't coming out of his way to reassure Warriors fans, explaining his approach to free agency, saying, quote, "Just be honest. I was honest with my decision, but just like outwardly, if people ask me about it, don't be ashamed to talk about why I decided to move teams and switch teams, because it's not the end of the world. I didn't do anything against the law. You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought happened the first time." To me, all this transparency is not a good sign for Golden State. If you're sticking in Golden State, I don't know if you need to be all that transparent.
Yeah, exactly. To me, I mean, it's an amazing experience. I get all that, but don't think you're the only one DMing her. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, other teams are like, yo, we got packages out here too. And, you know, curiosity can get the best of us. So, I mean, you know this team. You know him. Very close, intimate connection. What do you think?
Well, I just think right now, I know from the Warriors standpoint, they would hope that he would just shelve all the free agency talk. You know, they're going through a little contract situation with the guy by the name of Patrick McCaw, who is not even a rotation guy. And they got to the point where Coach Kerr a couple days ago was like, look, we're not talking about Patrick McCaw right now. You know, we want to focus on his team. So if they're saying that about Patrick, I know that they hope and wish that Durant wouldn't be so transparent, at least throughout the course of the regular season when they're trying to get their third straight NBA championship.
He could make this season a soap opera. And Chris, so far right now, you would be the co-star of this soap opera, because this morning you indicated the Knicks may be a possibility for Kevin Durant. Expound on that for
me. That's been out there for a while, Jason. You know, look, he has a representative, his business partner, Rich Kleiman, who's based in New York. His business is based there in New York. There's a lot of ties there. And they're going to have cap space in order to bring in not one, but a couple marquee players such as Durant. So that's going to be a team that I know that's going to be intriguing when it's all said and done. And let's keep this in mind. You know, I said this before, but when you think about the Golden State Warriors, even though Kevin Durant is the second best player in the league, I think most of us would agree with that.
Yeah.
It's still Steph's team. And so him leaving or bolting, it wouldn't have the same ramifications that it did when he left OKC. So if the Golden State loses in the finals or wins in the finals, I think we believe they'll get there, it's not any pressure on him to bounce, because I don't think that he feels like he's endeared there as much as some of the other players who've been there from day one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's some parallels between LeBron James and when he went to the Heat, and there was an out for him to go, because that was still Dwayne's team and Wade County and all that stuff. So I get all that. Not sure if you have any kids. You have any kids?
I got four.
Four? Oh, yeah. God.
Woo, man. All girls.
You're not wearing it.
All
though.
Girls.
It don't crack, does it?
Oh, okay. God, you got four girls.
Four girls. Boy, you were at Fresno State. You were an animal, huh? Let me let this go. So you've seen The Lion King 1,001 times.
Uh-huh.
I know
yes,
I have. The Circle of Life.
Yes.
And let's talk about how the Circle of Life applies to Kevin Durant. This is what happens for every single athlete I've ever met. And in private, they will all agree to this. Uh-huh. First thing you want is the money. Let's not act like anything else matters.
No doubt.
After that, we want the accolades. And people always say, no, you want the accolades first. No, you don't. You don't want to be all NBA and making $600,000.
Yeah.
You don't want to be all pro and making $1 million. You want to get the money, then the accolades. Mm-hmm. What comes after that is peace of mind. Like, I just want everything to be still. Let me enjoy the moment, stay in the present. Then the next step is happiness. That means all of a sudden, if I'm LeBron James, I want to go somewhere and expand my empire, expand my career, my movie interest. If I'm Kevin Durant, I got my business interests. How can I make those explode even more so? I think he's right in that place between peace of mind, finally just taking it in. Hey, y'all hate me. Forget it. I don't care. But where can I go and elevate this? Sometimes you get stale. Success can get stale. Coaches always say that. Don't get bored with success. He might get bored with it. Another Finals MVP, Steph's team. Yeah. Oh, it was kind of easy.
For one second, Chris, before I want to add another layer to Marcellus' deal. I think what Kevin Durant wants, and I think those things are right, but respect.
Ah, there you go.
Respect is the issue. And when I hear you say that New York is a possibility, I still think Kevin Durant is still in that mindset, I want to be the man. Mm-hmm. I want to unseat LeBron James. Yeah. And New York is a place where he could potentially do it. You know, you got a media center out here in L.A., but the ultimate media center is New York. And if he wants to, if he could be the king of New York, he could potentially unseat LeBron.
No, no doubt. And, you know, people are trying to throw the link out of him and LeBron possibly teaming up. I think that would be the worst case scenario for a person like Kevin Durant, because we all know he's tired of the narrative that he did, you know, he contributed, but he didn't lead the team. You know, he joined a well-oiled machine already.
Yeah.
So the him going to New York where it would be his team, and then you got the likes of Kyrie Irving out there. You got the likes of Jimmy Butler out there potentially. So it can be set up for him that can be his team, be in a big market where he can expand his business, but also he can take that next step. Because, look, we all know he is sensitive. I talked to him about not responding to people on social media. He was like, why do I got to stop? I'm a young man. People coming at me. I should be able to come back at him. So that is not going to stop. But he does get tired of that narrative, and I think that will be one way of him trying to overcome
you
that.
Lead the Knicks to a championship.
Woo, it's all
right. That's as big as you can as do in the NBA.
And you're the man.
Marcellus, I know Chris is your boy.
Yes.
You give me a lot of grief about my one earring. Could you talk to Chris about this, his part in his hair?
Well, that's
1992, Marcellus.
Hold on.
Could you family matters?
Hold on, talk about now. If y'all allowing Shannon Sharp to come every day with that old school come on now. Y'all can let this go. Come on,
that'd be $8.
Come on, now.
You better
now, y'all let Shannon go in here unchecked.
Good point.
Come on, now.
Let's get to some big stories, starting right here in Los Angeles, where the Dodgers kick off their National League Division Series against the Braves tonight. It's now been 30 years since the Dodgers' last World Series championship, and after coming up just short last year against the Astros, the LA Times now says it's championship or bust for Dave Roberts' crew. Marcellus, you agree?
Disagree. Absolutely disagree. It's interesting how L.A. will sell itself, as we are the hub and the epicenter of culture. We export our culture all across the world. And what we're trying to do right now is export a team that hasn't won a World Series in 30 years and say this is a World Series or bust campaign for this team. How? With the injuries and the inconsistencies they've had this year, this was a good sell last year when the team looked like, hey, you should win the World Series and came one game short, despite some implosions by Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. And it's interesting, the video started off with Kenley Jansen and his inconsistencies this year. This is a guy who's given up 13 home runs, used to be the best reliever, certainly in the National League, 13 home runs this season alone. That's four more than the previous two seasons combined. This is not a team that is supposed to win the World Series. This is a scrappy bunch that have four must-win games, that won those games, got hot at the right time, but at the same time, the expectations are lower. We're trying to sell this more so than know this.
I think you may have missed the point of the LA Times story, in my view. Hmm. Look, they got the third highest payroll in baseball, so I don't want to hear any excuses. But more than that, you got the L.A. Rams going gangbusters.
Okay.
And you got LeBron James now in town with the Lakers.
Right.
And so what if the Dodgers want to keep this a Dodgers town when the NFL has shown up in the biggest way possible, this exciting offense, this team that looks like it's going to be a Super Bowl contender moving forward, not just this year, moving forward. LeBron James is going to be here for at least 4 years, paired with Magic Johnson. Maybe not this year, but in the following year, they're probably going to have someone for LeBron to play with. If the Dodgers don't want to be in third place, which maybe they already are now, it's World Series or bust. You can't go 30 years without winning a title and compete against a powerhouse football team and the biggest star in all of sports, LeBron James?
Well, look, I don't think 30 years has been the issue for the Dodgers because they've had the highest payroll before. They keep beating their own record, and now they've dropped to third when they used to be first. Attendance records, they keep beating their own attendance records. But the Lakers didn't lose any of its luster in terms of it being number one in L.A. despite its lowly times in the 90s and despite its lowly times in the last 5 years. Like, we keep saying, oh, and the Raiders and Rams were here before. The Rams have not supplanted the Raiders despite their success now. And if they win the Super Bowl, it's still a Raiders town.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? But
I don't know if that'll be true.
I would say this, that baseball – in terms of what it means to L.A., it's historical. Like the game is. It's a game of numbers. It's a game of that history. Dodgers need to win for the Dodgers. But don't sell a Showtime version of the Dodgers when this is a scrappy bunch that may get out in the first round.
All right, to a big story in the NBA, where the league's annual survey of general managers just picked LeBron James as the favorite to win MVP this year. It's hard to believe, but LeBron hasn't won the award since 2013. And our friend Chris Carter on First Things First says winning this year would carry a special significance.
I feel as if LeBron does win MVP, it's like his fourth championship. 16th year in the league at this age. And I think this is a tremendous compliment coming from the general managers.
All right, so I saw this morning. I thought it was an interesting discussion Chris was having. Could a championship, an MVP be just as valuable to LeBron's legacy as another title?
No. And I think when you hear that, you try to process that and you say, oh, that makes sense. You know, like at this age, 34, and playing for another franchise and to be the best in the world, but actually get respected as the MVP by journalists, amazing. Until you start to think, the collective doesn't respect MVPs like they do championships. Go to any barbershop, go to any sports bar and sit there and start saying, hey man, how many MVPs does Jordan have?
People, five.
Right, and then you say, how many does Kareem have?
Six.
How many does Shaq have?
One or two.
There
he
we go.
Robbed. Now he got robbed.
How many drinks
he got
you had?
Robbed by Steve
How many
Nash.
Drinks you had?
He got one, I think.
Okay. And Larry Bird. Magic.
Larry Bird had three or four.
There you go. See, that's the thing.
Magic had five.
Four. See, here we go. Yeah. Now, you ready?
Yeah.
It's interesting how you're starting to get divided and start. But when I start saying how many championships, it's not three or four. It's not four. Right. It's boom. And that's the problem with LeBron. He's not going to win the MVP. It's a traveling trophy. And even if he does, we're not going to say, oh, that's your fourth ring. We're going to say you were due more MVPs in the past.
If he gets to a fifth MVP, that's the same number as Michael Jordan. And trust me, the LeBron lovers will start making that a part of their argument. He's got five MVPs. And he got his fifth at age 34 on a Lakers team that wasn't that good. They'll make it part of their argument. I do think it will enhance his legacy. Will it make it the equal of Michael Jordan? No. Is it the equal of another championship? No.
Right.
But it is a nice, another accomplishment that LeBron can add. And trust me, if he gets his fifth, he's going to damn sure make sure he gets his sixth. And tie him with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and have one more than Michael Jordan. And so I do think it'll just be another little feather in LeBron's cap in his war against Michael Jordan and the people that are involved in it. Look, to me, he'll never be the equal of Michael Jordan.
Ooh, you went there.
But no, he'll never be the equal of Michael Jordan.
Another segment.
And if he gets two or three
we gotta have that segment one day.
Yeah, he'll never be the equal of Michael
Don't
Jordan.
Do that.
But if he gets this extra MVP, it enters him a step closer.
Look, LeBron has to have all these parts add up to be a greater sum than what he is, because Jordan is perfection. LeBron is, like you said, another feather. You know, you used to walk to the bank when you were little and you didn't have a dollar. You had 100 pennies. I got a dollar once I walk out the bank, but right. I walked in with 100 pennies. This is another penny to that collection to try and catch up to that $1 bill that Jordan has already placed down. I don't think it measures up, as you even said. MVPs versus championships. I've never heard a player preseason say, you know what my goal is this year? Go out there and get that MVP.
That's because they don't say it that loud, but trust me, a lot of them had that goal. Kevin Durant's got it this year. I guarantee you.
Would he take it in place of a championship?
Maybe.
Oh, stop. Now we're doing TV.
Maybe.
Now we're doing TV.
Maybe. Stop. All right, let's move to college baseball, where the University of Georgia decided to dismiss one of its best players, senior first baseman Adam Sasser, after reports that Sasser directed racial slurs from the stands at Bulldogs backup quarterback Justin Fields during the football team's game against Tennessee on Saturday. Marcellus,
yes.
Was dismissing Sasser from the team the right move?
Absolutely, it's the right move. I'll give you something Grandma used to tell me, and I know you're religified, you're a spiritual guy, yep. You go to church. Grandma said, God whispers before he yells. And think about this when you're talking about a student athlete who is held to a higher standard because of all the perks and all the accolades you're given, just being on the team, let alone being successful and good at the team. You get to walk around with the sweatsuit, the empty backpack. You get to go to the frat party and say hello to the girl. She already knows your name before you even said hello. All the perks, and there is some fine print. You can't act stupid like everyone else. So here's the thing that really is discouraging about this. One, that the N-word was in him. Like, somewhere in him, he felt comfortable N-word, whether in private or not. But he took it outside. And then not only did he take it outside, they told him to stop when he was outside. And he kept going. Guess what? It's time to yell at this dude. It's time to come down with the hammer. And I think that this is setting a great example of whatever your private behavior is, which we don't even want to support.
This is public behavior, but go ahead.
Yeah, whatever your private behavior is, please respect that it's private behavior. Now, representing our university as a member of the baseball team, you got to take the hell that comes from it.
I think that there was a young woman involved in this who I thought handled everything very appropriately, asked him to stop, got the police to come over to try to get him to stop, and he did eventually, and then went someplace where you complain about fan behavior and did it perfect.
Yes.
As an adult, I'm very reluctant to give up on people because I just know the mistakes I made in youth.
True.
And thank God some of them didn't become public because I made some serious mistakes and things that I would put on par with this dude being an idiot. So I felt like what should have happened is he should have been suspended from the team and punished. And then when I see behavior like this, this is someone that needs help, literally needs some mental help. And so I'm not for discarding people. I'm for giving them the help that they need. He needs some counseling, because if you're out in public at a sporting event surrounded by all these people you don't know, and you're a representative of that university, and there's another representative of that university that you have a partnership and alliance with, you're both student athletes, and you think, I don't care how much alcohol was consumed, you think this is appropriate, this is somebody to me screaming for help, and I would rather give him help than to ostracize him and move him out of society, because I just know there have been times in my life where I've needed help, and thank God I was given time to evolve and mature and become a better person.
Okay, look, I'm not saying ostracize a guy. I'm saying you need help, and we're going to put this in proper priority, which is your life, your personal issues first, not baseball first, and then let's get you help on the side. So this is a way to reprioritize what's important to this kid. And the kid has to go through this process, sometimes being told that that's not good enough and we're going to discipline you in terms of action, is the wake-up call you need. So I don't want to make this guy think, oh, I could go to practice in a week or two if I just go through this routine process of evaluation. This is good. And the guy owned up to it. He seems to show some contrition, respect for that. And thank God this is not another case of someone saying this is some rap lyrics. Tired of hearing that one, dog.
No, this was not rap.
No, this is
an idiot. To another guy breaking records this year, Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
The Chiefs quarterback is off to one of the hottest starts in NFL history, but he will face his toughest test yet against the Jaguars' vaunted defense on Sunday. But even Jags coach Doug Marrone sounds like he's in awe of Mahomes, saying he can't put into perspective how well the young quarterback is playing. I think there's no shot that the Jaguars slow down Patrick Mahomes. He just had his slowdown game against the Broncos for three quarters and then came back out in the fourth quarter and became a monster. I expect to see that monster against the Jaguars.
Yeah, let me plagiarize the great Trent Dilfer, one of my closest friends and minds when it comes to football. He said,
y'all got the same hairstyle. Go
shut
ahead.
That. there's no defending the perfect pass. And as a former defender, I don't care what position you're in, you can't defend a perfect pass, and more so than anybody we've seen of late. This guy throws perfect passes. Well,
you know what, though? He's not going to throw 35 perfect passes out of 48 attempts.
Good point.
Come Sunday. And I just think that this Jacksonville defense, they're built different. When you can just rush with three or even four at times and drop the rest of those guys in coverage, it's going to make for a long day for old Patty Mahomes here. Mm. Because I'm telling you, that defense will not.
You're a non-believer.
Will not no, I'm not a non-believer. I think Patrick Mahomes is an amazing talent. Okay. I want to see him do it for the full season.
Yeah.
But this is one of those. This is one of those matchups that's going to humble him a little bit, or not even humble him, because I feel as though he is humble in his approach. But I think we as the media, we tend to crown
humble
him.
Me.
We're crowning him.
Yeah.
And so I just think this is going to bring him back down to reality. This defense isn't what he's going to face every week.
Right.
And so we'll see him go against the best. You talk about Tyreek Hill calling out Jalen Ramsey saying, yeah, I want to see this dude, because mm-hmm. people saying I'm good. We all know he's good. Let's go. Let's match up. That's the kind of one-on-one matchups you're going to see. And I'm telling you, if that front can rush him with three and four guys and allow everyone else to play coverage, man, they linebackers can run. Mm. Like, Pat Mahomes is not going to be running out this pocket and think Miles Jack and Tevin Smith
hard
can't,
enough,
can't
man.
Go
Marcus
get him.
Marcus Mariota beat man. Them. I'm like, you act like this man. Team is all world.
I'm
like,
telling
they're
you,
beatable. Marcus Mariota defense, with they, one arm, with
they
one
will
hand,
be,
beat them.
They will be they will be ready.
Okay, I'm listening.
And Doug Marone's trying to make sure.
Well, I'm 100% with you when it comes to this Jacksonville Jaguar defense, not only from a back-end standpoint. Their linebackers can run like none other. They're physically, they will dominate a line of scrimmage. What was the thing you said earlier in the program? I was listening. I was over there kind of taking a little nap, and I heard it because it resonated with me. It was something about do and doo-doo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're do
so
or
the
you're doo-doo,
doo-doo is the Chiefs' defense. And let me just tell you on the doo-doo aspect of that is Doug Marone understands complementary football, and he understands the value of playing smash-mouth football and not letting Patrick Mahomes. I don't care how healthy Fournette is. That doesn't matter to me. They will physically dominate the line of scrimmage. Hey, how healthy you know, you look at Freeman had 8 carries in that Monday night game, averaged 9 yards a carry. Lindsey had, I don't know how many carries he had, but he averaged almost six yards a carry.
True.
The Broncos, they came out, and the very end of that game had an opportunity to salt it away. They came out on 11 personnel, and they threw a bubble screen, and they had – like, come in, line up with two tights, line up with a fullback and a running back.
They're going to keep Mahomes
on the sideline. They're going to keep Mahomes on the sideline. And that defense, let me tell you, that defense is for real, and they're going to be fresh because of the complementary nature of the way they do it. I think Jacksonville upsets them.
Here's what blows up your whole deal. When they're down 10 in the second quarter, they're going to have to throw the football. And that's what Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, we already know what Andy Reid's first 15, 20 plays look like for 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to put some points on the – last week was the first time they didn't score on their opening – a touchdown on their opening possession. They had to settle for a field goal. Andy Reid is going to figure out a way to put 2 scores on the board and make Jacksonville have to play catch-up.
Make Blake Bortles say catch-up without
Blake,
Leonard Fournette.
Blake Bortles can even beat this Kansas City defense, man, to be honest.